Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Chapter entitled Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. Text number. Is it which one?
4.
Nana. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Since you have desired to increase the population innumerably and expand your varieties of service, you shall never be deprived in this matter because my causeless mercy upon you will always increase for all time. Translation responsibly. Since you have desired to increase the population innumerably.
Since you have desired to increase the population innumerably.
And expand your varieties of service.
And expand your varieties of service.
You shall never be deprived in this matter.
You shall never be deprived in this matter.
Because my causeless mercy upon you.
Because my causeless mercy upon you.
Will always increase for all time.
Will always increase for all time.
But Mataji, you can't sit like that. You have to sit. Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord, being cognizant of the facts of the particular time, object, and circumstances, always desires to expand the number of devotees of the Lord in various ways. Such expansions of transcendental service may appear to be material to the materialist, but factually, they are expansions of the causeless mercy of the Lord towards the devotee. Plans for such activities may appear to be material activities, but they are different in potency. Being engaged in the satisfaction of the transcendental senses of the Supreme. Omigyan Tibadandasya Kinanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Vinitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha kaupata rubyascha kripa sindubhi evacha pititanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare. So the chapter is entitled Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. So Lord Brahma wants to perform his service for Krishna. What is his seva? His savior is creation. Creation is under the influence of the mode of passion. Maintenance is under the influence of the mode of goodness. And destruction is under the influence of the mode of ignorance. So all of these can be employed in Krishna's service. You can do all of these things for Krishna. Passion, you can create something. Just like the devotees are painting, they're cleaning, and they're refurbishing and doing this activity, it requires passion to get something done. If you want to get something done, you have to become passionate. But it's like, say you're a doctor or a surgeon, and you take the scalpel, the instrument to cut. So you're performing surgery, so you cut someone's body and you do the surgery like that. So it is an instrument. So you have control of the instrument. You don't let the instrument control you. You don't just grab the knife and start, you know, the nurse is standing next to you, you don't just grab the knife and go, cut the nurse, you know. Don't let it control you. Because you are in control. And therefore you employ the instrument in the service of what is necessary to be done. So in the same way, the mode of passion, it is employed by the devotee in the service of Krishna. But the devotee does not let the mode of passion overcome the devotee. And this is what Brahma is praying to Krishna specifically for in this chapter. He says, okay, now my service is creation, because you have given me this service. So So we have to understand when the guru gives you service, that is coming from God himself. It is coming from Krishna himself. In this case, the guru is Krishna, directly. Who is Brahma's guru? Who is the first person in our sampradaya? Yeah, well, Brahma, we say it's the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Sampradaya, like that. So, Brahma is the first person. But then, so where does Brahma get instructed from? If you read the Bhagavatam, second canto, directly he is instructed by God himself, Krishna himself. God can be the guru. Just like the devotees asked Prabhupada, they said to Prabhupada, who is the guru of the Brijbasis? And Prabhupada said, Krishna. Directly. Krishna is their guru. They see. Even the modern day Brijbasis, so many of them are purified, very advanced people. They see Krishna directly as the guru. And if someone is pure, then he can directly receive instruction from Krishna. Even Prabhupada did this. In 1977, he was preparing to leave this world. It was in May. And it was evident that Prabhupada was going to leave soon because Prabhupada's body was emaciated. And everyone knew that Prabhupada did not have long to stay with the devotees. So the devotees came to Prabhupada at one stage and said, Prabhupada, please stay with us. And Prabhupada said, I will ask Krishna. And then he put his head back. And for 3 or 4 minutes, he was in a deep state of trance, samadhi, meditation. And then after 3 or 4 minutes, and Prabhupada came back to consciousness, and Prabhupada said, Krishna has left the decision up to me. Whether I go or I stay, Krishna said, that is up to you. Krishna said, if you want to stay longer, stay longer. If you want to go now, go now. So the devotees said, well, if Krishna has left the decision to you, then Prabhupada stay. So Prabhupada thought for a few moments, and Prabhupada said, all right. So he sat up. No, he didn't sit up. They had to lift him up. And they gave him some grape juice, and he drank a whole glass of grape juice. Prabhupada hadn't eaten anything substantial for a number of weeks. They gave him a whole, and then he took it, and then he said, okay, now, if I'm going to stay, I need to get strength. I need to eat. So, in this case, Brahma is directly receiving instruction from Krishna. Now, Brahma is the first person in the sampradaya. So where does our sampradaya go? Because then we say it is the Brahma, Brahma Madhva. So who is Madhva? Acharya. Because how long ago was Madhuracharya on the earth? Madhva. Anyone knows Madhuracharya? There's 4 great acharyas, the 4 sampradayas. There is the Brahma sampradaya, come from Brahma, one from Shiva, Rudra, and one from Lakshmi, one from the Kumaras. Right? And then there are 4 acharyas of those sampradayas. So there is Madhva, Ramanuja, Nimbaka, and Vishnu Swami. So from the Rudra Sampradaya, we have the acharyas Vishnu Swami. From the Nimbaka Sampradaya, from the Kumara Sampradaya, we have Nimbaka, Acharya. And then from Sri, from Lakshmi, we have Ramanuja. And then from Brahma, we have Madhva. So how did it get from Brahma to Madhva? You know, when you look in the introduction to the Gita, and you see the disciplic succession coming down. So how does it get from Brahma to Madhvacharya? How long ago did Madhvacharya live? How long ago was he on this planet?
Prior to Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah, about the 12th century. So it's not long ago, it's maybe 800 years ago. So it wasn't that long ago, the Madhvacharya. So how did he get from Lord Brahma to Madhva? We say Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Sampradaya. So if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada, he delineates the disciplic succession. So we have Krishna. Krishna is Adi Guru. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, we hear that Krishna directly spoke to Brahma. Right? Then who is next? Right? It says Brahma spoke to Narada. Who is Narada? Brahma's son. One of the sons of Brahma is Narada. So he spoke directly to his son. And then who is next?
Vyas.
Vyas. Right? So Vyas was spoken to by Narada. He is his guru. You hear in the Bhagavatam back in the first canto, then Vyas directly speaks to Narada. Narada directly speaks to Vyas. Right, and then who is after Vyas? Yeah, then it says in the, if you look in the introduction to the Gita, then it says from Vyas there was Madhva. So Vyas is 5,000 years ago. Madhva is 800 years ago, right? So the four great acharyas, Madhva, Ramanuj, these great acharyas, they went to the Himalaya. There's a place in the Himalaya called Badrik Ashram, which is still there today. You can go there today. You can only go there at this time of year. You've been there too? Badrik Ashram? Yeah, you've been there. So you go to Badrik Ashram. This time of year you can go, but in the winter time it snows. You cannot get in there. They close it off for like 4 months, is it? 4 months you can't.
5 months,
yeah. Yeah, sometimes five and a half. Sometimes even 6 months. So for 5 months you can't get there because the snow covers the area. So this is the Badrik Ashram. So who lives in Badrik Ashram? Vyasadeva. So even to this day, if you go there, if you have the eyes, premanjanach churita bhakti valochinena, if your eyes are purified, you will see Vyasadeva. He's still there, even to this day. Naranarayan Rishi, the great sages, they're still there to this day. So if you go there, you can directly see them. So Madhva went there 800 years ago. And because Vyasa is there, he could see Vyasa. Then he heard the Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva. Yeah. So that's why it says it comes from Brahma to Vyas to Madhva. And then from Madhva, then we see the succession goes down and it gets to Madhavendra Puri. And then it gets to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then it passes down and then it comes to Prabhupada. And now from Prabhupada it goes to, not just from Prabhupada, but from many devotees in the Gaudiya Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur's disciples. The disciplic succession is continuing. So, this is the history. So it is called Brahma, Madhva, and Gaudiya. What does Gaudiya mean? Yeah, actually Gaudadesh means the northern part of India. Right? It's not just Bengal, but it's the whole northern area. And then down in the southern area, we have the Pancha Dravida. There's five like areas. And the mood of devotion or bhakti in the southern part of India is very different to the mood of devotion in the northern part of India. If you go to the southern part of India, they worship particular deities. Lakshmi Narayan, Vishnu. You see all the famous temples. What are the most famous temples? Tirupati, Sri Rangam. All that, and you see the deities there. There's no Radha Krishna in South India, right? And there's no, not there's no. There's it's mainly Lakshmi Narayan worship. The mood is a Vaikuntha Bhav. It is very much a Dasya Bhav. That is the mood of the Pancha Dravida or the southern part of India. That is the mood. The bhakti is different. The mood is different. Pure devotion, just like Prabhupada, he even translated the Mukunda Mala Stotra. Who was written by who? It was written by King Kulashekhar. And who was King Kulashekhar? He's one of the Alvars. He's one of the great saints of southern India. But Prabhupada and many of the Gaudiyas, Prabhupada's guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they took inspiration from the pure devotional prayers of the southern devotees, even though the mood is different. But they took, so there's pure bhakti, but the mood is different. Gaudiya means the five areas in the north of India. And that is where the worship of Radha Krishna and Sita Ram, the mood is different. The mood of worship is different. The mood of worship to Radha Krishna and to Lakshmi Narayan are quite different. So the southern type of India, the southern type of worship, it is different. And the northern type of worship is different. So we are coming from the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya means we are coming from the northern part of India. That is our tradition. Because our tradition is based upon worship of Radha Krishna. You see, Prabhupada, wherever he went around the world, did he install Lakshmi Narayan? No. Did he install Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman? He did, yeah. A couple of times. In Bhaktivedanta Manor and in Juhu in Mumbai. So a couple of times he did. Because Prabhupada was a expert preacher, so Prabhupada understood that the people in this area are very attracted to to these particular deities. And because then Ram and Krishna are non-different, then he installed Lord Ramachandra in those places. But generally, if you go all over the world, like in this part of the world, Prabhupada installed who? Radha Ballabha in Melbourne, then in Sydney. Radha Gopinath. Has anyone seen Radha Gopinath? Yeah, most beautiful deities, Radha Gopinath, exquisite deities like that. Prabhupada brought them on the plane to Australia. Right? And two devotees were sitting next to Prabhupada. They had Radharani and Gopinath on their laps, on the plane. And held them on the laps all the way from India to Australia. Like that. So they were the first deities installed in Australia. 40 years ago, they were installed. I think it was 1971, because the 40th anniversary was in 2011. Yeah, 2011 was the 40th anniversary. So 1971, Prabhupada installed Radha Gopinath. And then in New Zealand, he installed Radha Giridhari in Auckland. And in Melbourne, in 1973, then he installed Radha Ballabha. And then in 1975, which is 40 years ago, in a couple of days from now, he installed Gaura Nittai, who are the biggest solid metal deities of Gaura Nittai on the planet until very recently, and then someone else took over in Mayapur. Mayapur just went Mahaprabhu manifested to the biggest side. But these deities, though, the biggest caste deities of Gaura Nittai on the planet up until a few years ago. And then Mahaprabhu manifested himself fully in Mayapur, 7 foot tall. But these deities, they weigh half a ton each. It takes 6 men to pick them up. Right? If you lift them, right, physically it takes 6 men to lift them. Very, very heavy. So they were cast, I believe, in Navadvip. And then they were floated down the Ganga, down to Calcutta, and then they were put on the boat and then on the plane, and then they were sent across to Melbourne, and then they were installed here. And Prabhupada called it Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. We're going to learn about our history. Very, very important to understand our history, because our history is coming up in the next few weeks, 40 years. Remarkable. Great credit to Aniruddha Prabhu and Achintarupa Manaji, and unlimited, we'll hear about unlimited devotees have served and kept this place running. So it is a great credit that these deities are being worshipped after 40 years so elaborately, so nicely. It's a high standard of worship. 7 offerings every day. Who else gets to eat 7 times a day? Well, you must be very special. You get dressed 3 times a day or 2 times a day. Most temples can't maintain these standards, actually. You look at most of the other temples, they can't maintain these standards, even though these are the standards for Radha Krishna. It's a very special temple. The deities are very powerful here. Incredible reciprocation. And then the most beautiful deities in the universe. Of course, we were a little biased. But they are the most beautiful. Except for Vrindavan and Mayapur. But everywhere else. These are the most beautiful. Radharani is incomparable. Now, there's no Radharani like this. And Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, the most beautiful Jagannath Balaram Subhadra I've ever seen. And Gaura Nittai are immensely powerful. And Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, they appeared before Prabhupada himself in the Ratha Yatra in Melbourne. I think it was 1974. Was it 74? 72. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we have to look at the history books. But they appeared before Prabhupada on the calf. That was the first time they manifest. So the deities are incredibly potent. So this is called the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So we are Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, which means we're coming from the northern part of India, where Radha and Krishna are worshipped. That is our tradition. So that is our Sampradaya. It is coming down like that. So the first person in our Sampradaya, he is Brahma. So we're hearing here about Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is being instructed by his guru. Now who is his guru? Krishna himself. So Krishna is saying, create. Prabhupada says that when the guru gives an instruction, He also gives the potency to fulfill the instruction. So sometimes the guru gives you difficult instructions. And Prabhupada actually said one time, he said, I like, how did he say it? I'm just trying to think the exact words. He said, I like to, I can't remember exactly how he said it, but the words to the effect that he likes to make his disciples, he likes to challenge his disciples or make it difficult for them. I think the way he said it, he said, I like to see them struggle. So imagine, you think like this. You come to the Hare Krishna movement to be peaceful, right? Why did we all join? Why did I join? I walked in here, 1989, walked through the gate, walked around the corner. There was no one here. The temple was more quiet those days. I was there for about 15 minutes by myself in the courtyard. There's no one there. And I could just feel the mystical power of this place. So then I went and sat on the bench just out here. I was dressed in a suit. Because I wanted people to notice me. So I dressed in a suit. I was just very nice. I'm sitting there, and then I'm just waiting. I'm thinking, I hope someone walks past. I'm sitting there 15 minutes, no one walked past. And then someone walked past. I was going from the, it was about maybe 11:30. Someone was going from the paraphernalia room to the deity room to do seva. And it was a monk. He was dressed in saffron. And he kept walking past me. And he'd walk in, and then he'd come back out and walk back. And he'd do that three times. And he just looked at me every time he walked past. He didn't say anything. And I thought, wow, this place is spiritual. It's like, it's mystical. They don't even speak. They're just like, I thought they're just like absorbed in the spiritual energy. His name was Jagannath Ballabha Prabhu. I lived in that ashram for 8 years, Me and Jit, we lived there together for 8 years. And Jagannath Ballabha Prabhu, he washed my clothes every day for 8 years. Every day for 8 years he washed my clothes. He is my father, my mother, my guru, he is everything. He does more service than six of you put together. Six like young brahmacharis. When he goes to India, everyone like the whole temple goes, oh. So he was walking past, Just kept walking past. I'm just looking at him and I'm thinking, wow, And I thought, I want to be just like this, a monk. Don't talk and just, just read. Just read all day. And then he went and got someone. He went and got one devotee. And then she came and spoke to me. And then, like that. And then another devotee came and then he took me for lunch. And we had prasad. And then I walked in the temple for the first time. Jagannath Ballabha was sitting over there on the step and he was just reading. I thought, that's what I just want to be like. This is all I want to be like this, just a monk. I can just sit and I can just read and be peaceful. And then I joined the movement, and I haven't been peaceful since. Sometimes I think I should become a Buddhist, so I can be peaceful, But the reason I stay here is because the food is better. The Buddhists, their food is not so. That's what I say here. But it's not peaceful here. At all. I haven't been peaceful for years. Since I joined the movement, I haven't been peaceful. So, when the guru, and Prabhupada said that, he said, I like to see my disciples struggle. He said that. He said, I like to see them struggle. Why? Because it purifies us. You can't get purified unless you struggle or take on responsibility in Krishna's service. If there's no responsibility, you don't advance. You have to take responsibility for this movement to keep it going. Just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, he said, everyone else can leave, but you stay. So every devotee should feel like this. Everyone else can leave, that's okay. You can leave, you can leave, you can leave. You can all go, but I will stay. Every devotee should feel like that. I will stay, I will worship Radha Ballabha, I will make sure the service keeps going. Everyone else, you can go, that's your choice, but I will stay. So that means I will stay, and I will do 7 offerings a day. I will dress all 3 sets of deities. I'll go and do the wet side, I'll do the dry side, I'll go to the boga market. I'll cook all the offerings for the deities, and after 3 days I will leave my body. because that's what will happen. Because no one person can do this. No one person can do it. And Prabhupada said that. Not one of you, he said all of you together. He said that. He instructed the GBC. Because after Prabhupada, when Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur left the world, what happened? There was fighting. Who was going to be the next Acharya? So Prabhupada said to the GBC, he said, not one of you. He said, all of you together. And that is ISKCON. ISKCON means all of us together. We serve Krishna. It's not possible for one of us to do it. There's too much seva. But the mood of each devotee should, I will stay regardless. Right? So once you have that mood, then Krishna will test you. He will make it intense. Why does Krishna make it intense? Because he wants to purify you. This is how you become purified. When you take responsibility, okay, what is my responsibility? I will stay and serve the deities. And then Krishna will make it intense for you. Why? To purify the heart. So Brahma, he was given this instruction by Krishna himself to create the universe. That's a big service. You know, you think you've got a lot of service. You know, running Crossways. Imagine you had to run the universe. That's a big service. That's what Brahma does. He runs the universe. You know, it's a massive service. It was given to him by his guru. But when you're given the instruction by the guru, you're also given the potency to fulfill the instruction. And the guru will give you difficult instructions. Difficult instructions. And these days in ISKCON, actually, it's not so difficult. You know, technically, I mean, it is difficult. It's still a struggle. It's not easy to keep the movement going. But if you look at it compared to what the original devotees, the first devotees in our movement, the austerities they had to go through, what we go through now is not comparable. Prabhupada gave that instruction to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. It's a famous pastime. And they were trying to purchase that land in Mayapur. And some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, they were working against Prabhupada secretly behind the scenes so he could not secure the land. And the Muslim people, because the Muslims owned the land, they were also working against it. They were trying to buy the land, but they could not get it. So then Prabhupada, he gave Tamal Krishna Maharaj the instruction. He said, you go to Mayapur. He was in Calcutta. He goes, you go to Mayapur. He gave him the money, right? And he put it in a cloth pouch and he showed him how to wrap it around his waist or underneath his kurta. He said, you go to Mayapur and don't come back unless you have the land. And that's what Prabhupada was like. It was intense. You know, if Prabhupada says things, it was intense. You know, don't come back unless you have the land. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj walked out. It was a lot of pressure. And he went there to Mayapur and got the land and he came back and he said to Prabhupada, the land is yours. But Prabhupada was intense. Sometimes we think Prabhupada is like this, you know, just loving, very calm, very peaceful guru. Prabhupada wasn't like that. If you're with Prabhupada a lot, he was very intense. He was very loving and very sweet, but he was also incredibly intense. So that was the mood. I remember one time, I've told this story before, then Prabhupada was in Mayapur, they got the land, and if you go to Mayapur, at the front of the property, they have the little hut where Prabhupada was living. So he was living in that hut, and he had one half, and his disciples had the other half. So Prabhupada would go to bed around about 10:30, and then he would get up at 12:30 to translate. So he was translating, he woke up, and he began his translations like 1 in the morning. It's in Mayapur, everything is dark, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and devotees are sleeping, Prabhupada's up translating. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was sleeping out on the balcony, like outside of Prabhupada's hut, and he was snoring. So next minute he felt someone kicking him. And he woke up and he looked up and it was Prabhupada. Prabhupada was kicking him. And Prabhupada said, you are snoring. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, I was not snoring. But Prabhupada said, you were snoring. And he said, I was not snoring. He said, you were snoring. He said, go and sleep somewhere else. And Prabhupada walked back into the hut. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj got up, grabbed his sleeping bag, and he walked off into the dark to find somewhere to sleep. Right? And there were three choices, because they were starting the construction for the first building in Mayapur. So it was a pile of sand, a pile of steel, and I think a pile of bricks or rocks. So he looked at the pile of sand, he thought that looks comfortable. So then he lay down and took rest on the pile of sand in the dark out in the middle of Mayapur somewhere. So that's what Prabhupada was like. Prabhupada was very intense, but he would give you instructions. But inside the instruction was also the ability to fulfill the instruction. So Prabhupada would give devotees very big instructions. He would give them very difficult tasks, but he would also give them the potency to fulfill the task. So we see that Prabhupada, he said that to the devotees. He said that, I like to see my devotees struggle. I like to see them tested. And that's how they become purified, by taking responsibility and being tested. And Prabhupada would always give those difficult kind of tasks to purify the devotees. So we see also that Lord Brahma, he is getting a very difficult instruction from Krishna in one sense. Create the universe, populate the universe. It's a huge instruction. But he fulfills the instruction. Why? Because he has implicit faith in his spiritual master, which is Krishna. And because he has implicit faith in the guru, he gets the potency to fulfill the order. And he is successful. And Krishna says to him, since you have desired to increase the population innumerably and expand your varieties of service, you shall never be deprived in this matter because my causeless mercy upon you will always increase for all time. So in other words, Krishna is saying, if you do the service, I will give you unlimited facility to fulfill the service. And that was Prabhupada's faith. When Prabhupada began the movement, he went to New York and he was sitting on the park bench in New York. We told this story recently. And he was sitting there, and this is 1966. He used to go for a morning walk by himself at that time. There was practically no one in ISKCON. And he was sitting on a park bench, and this elderly gentleman would come and sit with Prabhupada regularly. And Prabhupada would talk to him. And Prabhupada would say, there are thousands of disciples. There are hundreds of temples. There are millions of books. But only time separates us. And the old man just thought, Prabhupada was just dreaming. He thought he was just, speaking about something. He was like he was a nice person. He would speak to Prabhupada. But then he said, I never thought it would happen. He met the devotees later on in the years, in the future. He said, I never thought it would happen. This one Swami was sitting on the bench talking about, now it all happened. In 10, 12 years, there were disciples everywhere. There were books everywhere. There were temples everywhere. Now, what was Prabhupada's success? Why was Prabhupada successful? Because he had implicit faith in the guru. The guru gave the instruction, and Prabhupada had unflinching trust in that the instruction could be fulfilled. And because of that unflinching trust, he was fully empowered by Krishna to spread the movement. So you saw Prabhupada did something which was inconceivable. And Krishna says this in the very last verse of the Gita. Sorry, it's not Krishna who says it. It's Sanjaya says to Dhritarashtra, the very last verse of the Gita. Right? Four things will come, right? When you surrender to Krishna fully. There will be morality, victory, extraordinary power, and opulence. These things will always follow. Wherever there is Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna, Dhananjaya, or the master archer, wherever Krishna is, wherever Arjuna is, then there will always be victory. There will always be morality. There will always be extraordinary power, and there will be opulence. So these things will come automatically when the devotee surrenders to Krishna. So we see the Prabhupada's success was that he did everything just because he had implicit faith. And Brahma is in the same situation right now. What is Brahma thinking? I will just surrender to Krishna. I'll just try to fulfill his order. I will use the mode of passion. So as we said in the beginning, mode of passion is somewhat dangerous. Because we need to use it in order to get things done. We have to get passionate to get things done. But we need to control our passion, not let our passion control us. Otherwise everything becomes very difficult in our service. So Brahma, he utilizes and he prays to Krishna. Now I'm going to get into the mode of passion. I need to serve you. But don't let me become affected. Don't let me become contaminated. And sometimes we have to get into the mode of ignorance. What is one of the qualities in the mode of ignorance? One of the principal qualities?
Sleep.
Yeah, sleep. Yep. That's true. Yeah, that's a different point. But I was thinking also, anger, right? Sometimes you have to get angry. Angry means destructive. It's a destructive force. But sometimes you have to use anger, Prabhupada explains, to remove obstacles in Krishna's service. So sometimes you have to employ anger, right? To move something. And Prabhupada gives the example of Hanuman and Arjuna. They used anger. They got angry. And Prabhupada even said that Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita just to make Arjuna angry. That was the conclusion of the Gita. Arjuna, now, are you angry now? Right? Now I'm angry. Okay, now do your seva. You have to get angry. If you're going to go into a battlefield and fight, you have to get angry. Otherwise, you know, you can't go on to, you know, Dronacharya is there and Karna is there and Bhishma is there and he starts throwing flowers at them. You know, you had to get angry. Right? At the beginning of the battle, just before the battle began, Arjuna says to Krishna, Senior Ubiyo Maje Ratan Stapiya Mecha, take my chariot between the two armies. So just before, he goes out and then he comes back. And then when Krishna speaks the Gita, now he surrenders and he says, now I will fight. Then he turns to Drona. Dronacharya was across on the other side. And he took his arrow and he shot the arrow. Right? And the arrow landed at the feet of Drona. So in other words, he was touching Drona's feet. He said, you're my guru. You taught me all of this. Dhanur Veda. You taught me how to fight, but now I'm going to use it to kill you. And then Drona, he took an arrow and he fired it back. And he shot past Arjuna's helmet and clipped his helmet. Ting. Right? Touching him on the head. Blessing him, saying, do what you need to do. This is a war now. He said, do what you need to do. If you need to kill me, kill me. But he said, you'll have a hard time. You want to kill me? It's not going to be easy. It wasn't easy to kill Drona. Actually, it was practically impossible to kill Drona. So that was the situation, is that he came to the mode of ignorance, in a sense, or he employed the mode of ignorance, he employed anger to do his seva. But he doesn't become overcome by the mode, or deeply affected by the mode. And Prabhupada was like that. Devotees said you could be with Prabhupada, and he would become angry with the devotee, but the next moment he was completely composed again. So he would use the anger to remove the obstacle, but he wouldn't stay angry because he was not influenced by the lower modes of nature. So we use passion to get things happening, but we don't remain in passion. Right? In other words, it's not our natural nature, or it's not our swabhav, or our nature. What is the swabhav of the devotee? Devotee is in the mode of goodness, naturally. Or actually, he's in the mode of pure goodness, ultimately. But he should act in the mode of goodness. So what is the swabhav of someone who is in the mode of goodness? Sama, damas, tapas, or charm. He has certain qualities. He lives in the mode of goodness. But when he has to get something going, then he'll employ passion. When he has to remove an obstacle, he'll employ ignorance. But it's not his nature to be like that. He's not naturally angry. He's not naturally passionate. But he uses it sometimes. So Brahma is praying here, okay, now I'm going to create, but don't let me become overcome by this lower mode. Okay, so we'll stop here. We'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Thank you. Any other questions?
How much before Lord Chaitanya's time was Madhvacharya? He was a medieval saint, is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't long before Lord Chaitanya. Does anyone know the actual time of Madhva? It was either the 8th century or the 12th century. I can't remember which one. I get it mixed up sometimes. But yeah, before Lord Chaitanya, it was within 300 to 800 years before Lord Chaitanya. So it wasn't long before Lord Chaitanya. So, any point?
So you're saying that we have to utilize the mode of passion to get things done and then change out of it, like according to time and circumstances, depending on what we need to achieve? Is that what you mean? So how do we change? Like, if someone's in the mode of passion,
if you read the read the Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita, which is one of our four main books. So then Prabhupada says in the introduction, he said, this book is meant to bring you from the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, to the mode of goodness. That's how he opens the book. So by following the lifestyle that we follow as devotees is sattvic. Right? We eat sattvic foods. We're meant to eat sattvic foods. We rise early, which is sattvic. We should live a peaceful existence. That's our philosophy. So gradually, because we're not born in the mode of passion or... we're not born in the mode of goodness all the time. Many of us are born, we're very modi by nature. We're very passionate, especially when we're young. And we're very sometimes ignorant. We have ignorant qualities. We get angry easily and things like that. But by following the lifestyle that we follow and by becoming purified by the process of bhakti, then you become elevated through those modes. So the negative symptoms of those modes, they don't affect you so much. What's the principal, one of the principal, or some of the principal symptoms of passion are lust and greed, right? Because Krishna says in the Gita, there are three gateways to hell, lust, greed, anger. Okay, so lust and greed are coming from passion. So the more you practice bhakti and you become purified and live this, you know, pure lifestyle, gradually lust will diminish, you should feel that in the heart. Greed will diminish, you should feel that in the heart. And the effect of the mode of ignorance, which is anger, that also becomes controlled. And that's the first verse of the Upadeshamrita. You have to learn to control anger. Right? Mind, tongue, belly, genitals, mind. So basically you look at it, it's lust, anger and greed. These are the things. Second verse says, you have to give up these things. Greed is one of the things you need to give up. So by living this lifestyle and adopting it and practicing the principles, that naturally those things happen. And you get more in the mode of goodness. And Prabhupada said from goodness you transfer to pure goodness.
So it's a certain, like it's a natural progression in terms of engaging the passion, which should service, and then over time you get purified and then eventually kind of get into the mode of goodness. Not that one,
Yeah, because if the passion's not purified, even though you say, I want to act in the mode of goodness, you'll keep dropping back to the mode of passion and ignorance. It's artificial. And Krishna said the same thing to Arjuna. Arjuna said, I'm going to renounce now. I don't want any of this, I'm just going to go. And Krishna said, well, that's not going to happen. Right? You'll go off into the forest, you'll be back pretty soon anyway. You know, you'll need a bow to carry, right? Because that's your swabhav, your nature. Because you're passionate. You need to exert that. So... Prabhupada actually said to the devotees, if you look in the Lilamrita, I think it's the fifth volume, Prabhupada says that if you exert your passion and your ignorance when you're young in Krishna's service, right, and use it, he said when you're older, you'll be able to chant Hare Krishna peacefully in Mayapur. But if you don't exert it when you're young, you won't. So we have to use it. We've got energy. Right. And Prabhupada employed the youthful energy of the youthful devotees to spread the movement. That's how it works. If you look at the Mormons, right, the Mormons are incredibly successful. Right? They're everywhere, all over the world. Right? They're incredibly successful formula. If you join, when most people join when they're young, then you have to go for 2 years to a foreign country and spread their word, spread their teachings. Right? So you see those young people with the passion. Right? The movement takes them when they're young, sends them out, gets them to exert the passion and use the energy, and then come back, and then usually they organize them to get married and get a job and situate them nicely. So that's the same formula that Prabhupada used. When you're young, you're pushed out by the movement to spread the movement, distribute prasadam, distribute books, distribute the holy name. And then when you get older, right, and you haven't got all that energy, then you know there's other services you can do to purify yourself. But you need to exert that in the beginning, in Krishna's service. So where you've got energy, then spread the movement. Any other points?
In one sense, you know, the mode of goodness is the morning program and sadhana practice, and then in the daytime we exercise our natural tendency to work. So in that way we purify pretty much whatever we do.
And we all know that, like, if we get up early, we all know, because we've all slept in, we all get up. We know the days we get up and we do the morning program, and then we start our service, we're in much better consciousness. We all know it. The days when we miss, you know, get up late and then 7 o'clock, and then you struggle to even get your rounds done for the rest of the day, and you're not in the same consciousness. I mean, until you become more purified and advanced, and practically you can do anything. But for most of us, we're very much affected by our... So we have to live that lifestyle, and that's why Prabhupada said you get up early. That's the secret. It's basically the secret of life, right, to rise. Ayurveda says it, and it's basically it's the secret of bhakti. You have to do it in the morning hours. Get that start, get that progress, and then you become purified in consciousness. So, you had a point?
1238.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so he was 300 years before Mahaprabhu. Not that so. Okay. Any other question? Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.